Maximize cloud efficiency with Duit, the trusted partner in multi-cloud management for thousands of companies worldwide. Visit Duit.com. That's Doit.com. Duit, your cloud simplified.
When it comes to taking your code, building artifacts, building binaries, and then ultimately shipping those binaries or artifacts, aka CI/CD, for platform engineering, it's not a small task. To be honest, everything that we do, from getting the system prepared to getting everything for the system and the capabilities deployed, all need to be via CI/CD. We don't want to be doing anything manual. That's what we're going to be talking about today. I'm Michael Levan.
And I'm Christina Devochko.
And today we are here with Marcus Noble to talk about this exact topic, CI/CD and platform engineering. Marcus, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Can't complain. When it comes to CI/CD, it's necessary from start to finish. Obviously, if we're building code artifacts, right, for application stacks and stuff, and then we're deploying them out. But even from a platform engineering perspective, if we are using Terraform to build our infrastructure as code or our configuration overall, we're taking that, we're deploying it. We still need a way to do that. So how do we do it? We package it up, right? We use a little CI. We get it deployed with, you know, continuous delivery or continuous deployment, whichever one you decide to go with. So regardless of where you are in the application stack, or rather where you are, you know, with the underlying platforms, with the platform capabilities, with whatever you're working on at that moment, if you need to get something deployed, CI/CD is the answer, right?
Yeah, what is actually interesting is that I have seen multiple times that CI/CD is being posed like a villain, like, oh, with platform engineering and with Kubernetes, with GitOps, you don't need CI/CD. And I think it's not quite that true, to be honest. But
I'd consider GitOps to be part of CI/CD. Like, that is exactly part of your deployment, right? If you have GitOps, you've got CI/CD. That is one part of it.
But it's not 100% replacement for CI/CD, right?
Exactly.
I definitely see that too. And I've spoken about CI/CD a couple of times on like LinkedIn and stuff. And people are like, well, why would we use that when we have GitOps? And it's like, for Kubernetes, right? When you're deploying resources, whatever you're deploying, whatever manifest you're deploying, whether it's anything from a deployment to a stateful set to a config map to a service, whatever you're deploying, yes, point the GitOps controller to that repo where those manifests exist. But that's not the only thing that needs to be deployed, right? We're talking systems, we're talking clusters, we're talking other capabilities. We're even talking getting GitOps deployed. So if you're using Argo CD, if you're using Flux, yeah, you're going to use those things to deploy Kubernetes manifests, but you still got to deploy Argo CD or Flux, right? How do you do that? You're going to manually go on the terminal and run the commands to get it deployed, or are you going to maybe take those commands and pop it into a pipeline? That way you can distribute it across multiple clusters. So
you can even take it a step further. Like, you need the thing that you're going to deploy Argo CD or Flux on. You need something that's going to create that cluster. You want to make sure that that cluster is always created in the same way and is always in the expected outcome that's then going to be workable for the rest of your pipeline, the rest of your processes and systems and stuff like that. There's always kind of more steps that can get covered by CI/CD, I feel.
No, 100%. It could be, you know, literally everything and anything. You know, I've seen even like several bash scripts, right? Or let's say you need to run a couple of bash commands or something like that for a system. Even something like that, like let's say you're not using Ansible or any other type of configuration management, and you need to deploy a couple of quick things throughout your systems, throughout your clusters, probably not your Kubernetes clusters at that point if you're using like a managed Kubernetes service, but maybe if you're using, you know, if you're bootstrapping with KubeADM, you're doing something on-prem and you need to get a couple of those systems ready, you could still use Bash to be able to deploy, or you could still use CI/CD to be able to deploy. I'm rambling, but to your point, there are so many different avenues that you can take to utilize CI/CD.
Mm. Yeah, and I think one of the things is there's no single solution that fits all of those different ways that you need to deploy things. Like, there's no one big application that solves all of these things. You need to look at each of these problems and address which is the right solution for the right job and this kind of thing. So you may end up with 3, 4, 5 different CI/CD tools in the end that end up covering your whole product, your whole platform.
Yeah, and I guess when it like comes to doing something at scale, especially when you are building or already have a platform, an internal developer platform, for example, the main goal of that is also the standardization piece. So you probably when you are doing that at scale, you would also want to have some kind of maybe guardrails or some kind of lines that would allow different teams to create their CI/CD flow depending on what kind of needs they have, but at the same time, ensure that the best practices are in place. I'm curious about like your experience and the way you are doing this in the projects that you're involved with, because I assume that you're doing it at scale with an IDP or something like that.
Yeah, so in Giant Swarm, what my team's responsible for is building out all the testing infrastructure and tooling for the other teams within the company to use while building out our Kubernetes platform offering. So we're building out bespoke tooling in-house that allows us to test Kubernetes cluster creation, configuration, and deletion based on changes made to applications by other teams. The way we've gone about it is we have a bunch of different CI/CD tools. Like I said, there's no one tool. We've got Flux in place for all our GitOps throughout the company. But in terms of the stuff that I directly work on, a lot of that is using technology called Tecton, which is Kubernetes cloud native CI/CD framework, I think I'll call it, that allows you then build on top of it and build out testing environment, testing pipelines and deployment pipelines on top of it. What it does, it gives you the ability to run tasks and to run pipelines, and then you can wire those together with like a layer on top that allows you to have your specific way of building things. So we put together a lot of YAML files. So it's all Kubernetes manifest. So it's YAML files for pipeline, for tasks, then wire together, you know, build this container image, publish it to our dev registry, deploy it to our test cluster, and then run this barrage of end-to-end tests and report back those results. So for each change that the teams within Giant Swarm do against our AWS cluster applications, each of those pull requests get tested with creation of a brand new Kubernetes cluster using all that configuration, running the end-to-end tests, ensuring it tears down correctly, and then reporting back all those test results that we're sure that, you know, no changes that we're introducing to both our cluster configuration and the default set of apps that we deploy onto that cluster are going to break the experience for our customers. Now, we can take this a step further. We also leverage the upstream Kubernetes CNCF conformance tests to make sure that our product is conformant. We do the similar sort of thing. So we'll spin up one of these clusters, point the tests at it, and report back all the results, things like that. Going back to what you said, Michael, about, you know, having these bash scripts about to make sure things are reproducible and stuff, like we definitely do have a lot of that. Like, it's not just a case of, you know, all of these is because we're using Kubernetes, not just it's all operators. There is stuff that you need before Kubernetes. You know, we need to have a reproducible set of commands that we can easily run to create the initial environment to then run these. So we do have several bash scripts about that will set up a kind cluster, for example, that then is used with cluster API to then spin out to an actual infrastructure in AWS, for example. That's how we test out our initial cluster creation steps.
Yeah, I definitely see that a lot as well, where it's like a lot of folks aren't thinking about the before, you know, they're thinking about the Kubernetes thing is just here, and oh, the GitOps thing is just here, and you know, it just kind of exists. But the reality is that we need several steps before that to even get there. And then once we're there, it's, you know, sometimes more or less, maybe a little smooth sailing. But before that, we still need to get the actual environment up and running. It needs to be configured. It needs to be secure. It needs to pass particular tests for your organization. Maybe it needs to have specific compliance requirements. Like, there are just all these different things that come prior. And you mentioned Tecton. I know what it is and I've read about it, but I never used it. So is there like a big difference between Tecton and like a general pipeline, like if I was using GitHub Actions or GitLab or whatever?
I think the main difference is that Tecton gives you the building blocks to build out a testing platform. So you'll actually find that a good number of the CI/CD options out there are actually built on top of Tecton. So Jenkins X, for example, its pipeline capabilities come from Tecton. They build on top of Tecton and create all this UI and other things around it. Similarly, in OpenShift, pipelines is also built on top of Tecton. It's just they've taken that framework, those building blocks, and built it into their platform into the bespoke way that makes sense for the use case. And that's exactly what we're doing in-house at Giantsville. We've taken those building blocks. So you've got things like you've got a task custom resource, you've got a pipeline custom resource, and you can wire those together in whatever way you see fit to then build up your capabilities, your ability to build things, to test things, to deploy things, to do whatever it is you need to do in an automated fashion. It's just a case of, you know, putting all this YAML together into your cluster as custom resources. And the Tecton project itself is split into a few different components. So the main component is Tecton pipelines, which is just a reconciliation operator that runs on these tasks and these pipelines. But then they've also got Tecton triggers, for example, which gives you a bunch of tooling to configure triggering of these pipelines. So through things like GitHub webhooks. So on pull request, you can point your GitHub webhook at your Tecton triggers, and it can then from those create a pipeline run in Tecton that then gets run and does whatever it is you've configured. And then there's things like, there's a dashboard as well that you can use to actually view these things. And then there's also Tecton chains, which allows you to do the provenance of images and build and things like that. And like all of these components can be swapped out for your own one as well if you wanted to. So the triggers, for example, you can swap those out for your own bespoke one. The dashboard, as OpenShift has done, they've swapped that out for their own dashboard within OpenShift itself. I think that's one of the things that's really powerful about Tecton, is it gives people that ability to build on top of it and build more than what it offers.
I haven't used Tecton either, so I just read a bit about it at some point. So when you mentioned that you could like switch out, that it is pluggable, so you could switch out some of the components. It's not necessarily that you need to switch with something of your own. It probably does it support like external existing components that you would just switch Tecton components with, like in terms of triggers. I don't know, maybe it's a stupid question. For example, like the triggers that you would use in GitHub Actions or something like that, could you like swap it instead of creating something yourself?
There may well be, but I don't know of any off the top of my head that replace just the individual components like that. Like I said, you can go and swap them out for something yourself, or there are solutions that have basically configured each of the bits. So Jenkins X, for example, I believe it only uses the pipeline component of Tecton, and then the rest of it is built from other things. So in that example, the triggers, I believe, is swapped out for either bespoke code or maybe another service that it uses. But in our use case, for example, we actually use a combination of the actual Tecton triggers project and some of our own bespoke code. Like, for example, a lot of the times we just want to be able to just trigger either on a cron job or manually when we need to like rebuild something or something. A lot of those times, all you really need to trigger a pipeline is, again, another custom resource called a pipeline run. You just create this pipeline run object in your cluster and Tecton takes over and actually does all the job. So as long as you have something that can create that resource, that's all you need. And that can just be a simple kubectl apply this CR and you're done. So actually swapping it out, as long as you don't need too much extra logic, is not too much of a hassle.
So if I were a team or a developer who would like to get the new application out, like you described a bit overall, like the different technologies that you're using and how the overall workflow looks like. So if we try to just look into the step-by-step for me and the developer role who would like to get an application out, what would the steps be? Like, how much do I need to write much of that YAML code myself, for example, to get that CI/CD in place? Or how would I approach this to get my app out?
The way that we've approached it in Giantsform is we've built a collection of testing pipelines that we as in my team have put together that allows you to then trigger these end-to-end tests. And we've built basically a Go application that runs as the test. So it uses Jinko to actually do all the test framework and stuff. And we then have a standard pipeline that is able to trigger from based on the GitHub repo, for example, that sends that webhook. So based on the repo that it's come from, we work out you know, what tests need to run, for example. So a new application that a team's developing, they just need to make sure that it's included in those webhooks that get sent to our Tecton cluster. And then we have this suite of end-to-end tests that will automatically get run against that change, but also where they can then add more if it makes sense to include. We're also currently building out at the moment the ability to have individual apps tested in this way. So the way that our platform is put together with our Kubernetes clusters that we provide for customers, there's a default set of apps that come with every cluster so that everything's, you know, production ready from the start. So you've got like ingress, logging, et cetera. That's all comes as standard. And that's what we're making sure is fully tested today. What we're currently working on is we've also got a suite of optional managed apps that customers can easily install onto our platform. And we want to make sure that they get the same level of rigorous testing and stuff that our default apps do. So we're looking at ways to test out those in combination with the default set of tests. So this will be another pipeline that will be triggered, again, based on what GitHub repo it is that triggers the webhook.
That's crazy. Huh. I think I got to look into that more. Yeah, because I've read about it, but I haven't really like done anything with it. But I should start pushing that more.
Yeah. This is kind of why we went with Tecton, is it allowed us to have that kind of really bespoke way of working that we wanted so that our teams could just get on with building the applications and stuff, rather than a more opinionated, off-the-shelf, fully ready CI/CD tool.
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking about. Like you mentioned, Michael, that you haven't used it before, and neither am I, and I'm kind of impressed by what it is able to do. And that's like, what are the use cases where it would make sense to use Tecton instead of like off-the-shelf tool, like CI/CD tools, like, I don't know, GitHub Workflow, for example? Is it just for those use cases where you need a lot of customization that off-the-shelf tools do not provide? Or like how complex it is to start to integrate Tecton? Like, is it a lot of work to make it work for you and bring value straight away?
Yeah, it seems like you would really use it like if you need to go that extra mile for the customization. And a lot of organizations need to do that. You know, maybe not the 5 to 10 person startup, but the mid to large size organizations where, even though we don't want to admit it, this is just the reality. In larger organizations, every team is kind of doing their own thing, more or less. So, you know, having something that's fully customizable for each team could actually make a lot of sense.
One of the other benefits I see as a Kubernetes company that deals day in, day out with Kubernetes is that because Tecton is Kubernetes native, it uses custom resource definitions for all of its operations and its source and stuff. We can leverage all our existing Kubernetes knowledge and configuration and like things like RBAC, for example, to then control, you know, how we work with Tecton and how we trigger things in Tecton and all that kind of thing. So it's very much a Kubernetes way of thinking when it comes to this reconfiguring of your CI/CD stuff, rather than having to learn, you know, all this UI clicky stuff that's maybe in Jenkins, or, you know, having to then learn the new GitHub Actions YAML file with their massive documentation and all this kind of thing. I mean, I'm not saying that there's no things you have to learn. There is a lot of YAML to write with Tecton. That's definitely for sure. But I think once you've got a good basis set up, repurposing a lot of the tasks and reusing them is relatively trivial. It's a lot of the same kind of YAML again and again, just pointing at different Docker files, for example, or different scripts that you want to run, that kind of thing.
Let's take a quick sponsor break. Maximize cloud efficiency with Doit, the trusted partner in multi-cloud management for thousands of companies worldwide. Doit's innovative tools, expert insights, and smart technology make optimization simple. Elevate your cloud strategy and simplify your cloud spend. Visit doit.com. That's doit.com. Doit, your cloud simplified. And now back to the show.
Switching gears for a second, because this is something that's popping up in my mind too as we're talking about Tecton. When it comes to GitOps, right? And for those of you who, you know, have maybe used GitOps, maybe not are fully embedded in it, really just think about it like a general controller, right? A general Kubernetes controller. So the whole idea behind a controller is you have this reconciliation loop, and the reconciliation loop is consistently and constantly checking to confirm that the current state is the desired state, right? The desired state is whatever you want it to be. And that's where you hear the term self-healing, right? It's not self-healing. It's a reconciliation loop that's constantly checking based on the code that you write within that reconciliation loop. That's what a GitOps controller is doing, right? So when we look at Argo, when we look at Flux, when we look at whatever, it's really a controller to confirm that the current state is the desired state. The desired state is the Kubernetes manifest. So if you have a deployment, you got three replicas or three pods, and you deploy, the GitOps controller is going to say, okay, it should have at least three pods. If it has two, it's going to try to do its thing and get another one deployed, et cetera. So my question to both Christina and Marcus is, does that fall more under continuous delivery or does it fall more under configuration management?
I don't see why it can't be both.
Right.
Depending on what it is that's contained within those manifests.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I don't see why it shouldn't be both, because you can get quite a lot of different things defined as part of your desired state that can fall under both.
And I know with things like Flux, for example, a lot of the ways that you work with it is you configure an initial customization that then points to additional customizations that point to various GitOps resources. I mean, that I would consider as config management. And then, you know, those additional configurations are pointing to your deployments, your replica sets, whatever that you're deploying for your apps. And then that's your deployment aspect. So it's definitely got aspects of both within it.
Yeah, I definitely see it the same way. And I asked that question, especially as we're talking about CI/CD, because whenever I talk about GitOps, I usually flip-flop in the sense of like talking about it more in the continuous delivery aspect and then talking about it more in the configuration aspect. But whenever I talk about it in the configuration aspect, you know, a lot of folks are like, well, it's more continuous delivery and more of the CD piece. And I'm like, yes, but I don't think that it's more of that, because the whole idea of like configuration management, right, is to confirm that your current state is your desired state. And that's what a GitOps controller is doing. That's what any Kubernetes controller is doing. But then on the flip side, to your point, it's also doing the deployment for you automatically, right? So you have that continuous delivery piece in there.
It's only doing that because it leverages the deployment controller within Kubernetes, for example. So it's not doing it on its own. It's a combination of the environment that it's in.
But I guess that's what confuses maybe other many who say that this is more the continuous delivery piece, because that's the one you have an association in your head with the execution piece, with the deployment piece. And that's why it seems like, okay, man, GitOps piece is just we are defining how we want our desired state to be. That's just the configuration piece. So I guess many do not necessarily think about like the actions happening to get that desired state also to the actual one.
Yeah, totally agree with you, 100%. So thinking about the top three things that we spoke about here in this podcast, it was general CI/CD. So whether you're going with GitHub Actions, whether you're going with GitLab, whether you're going with Jenkins, whatever, right? And then something like Tecton, specifically in the Kubernetes realm, for that extra customization that you may need. And then the GitOps piece, right? So thinking about all these three things, is there anything else that we're missing outside of those three things when it comes to CI/CD and platform engineering?
I think one of the things that we've struggled with that is in this area, but may not necessarily be directly, is being able to replicate this stuff as a developer locally. So being able to have the same level of confidence that things are going, that like tests, for example, are going to pass while I'm still in active development compared to when I've got a pull request. Because there's a lot of times where the things we're building aren't built in isolation. They rely on other things. They rely on, you know, all these different microservices, controllers in Kubernetes being there already, et cetera. And having that in a pipeline in CI/CD is quite easy. You know, you have steps at the beginning that set all up your prerequisites and then runs your test. When running locally, that's not always quite as easy. There's no sort of like winning best practice on how to set up prerequisites other than, you know, let's follow this script, let's run these commands first, let's run those commands first. Some of these solutions you can kind of replicate locally. If you're using GitHub Actions, for example, there is a project called ACT that allows you to effectively run your GitHub action on your local machine and replicate the same steps. That may not necessarily be exactly what you need for your local testing. You know, there may be secret configurations stored in your CI/CD pipelines that you rely on to be able to run this. And it's like figuring out how to best bring that environment down to a local machine to give developers that quick feedback and the confidence that their changes work, I think is still a difficult subject. And I don't think it's one that's particularly solved well as of yet.
Yeah. And we normally encourage developers to like do and test as early as possible locally before you get all that frustration from failing pipelines. And that's kind of where I can imagine a lot of frustration would face the developers if there is no easy way to set it up locally. Like, how shall I be able to do this efficiently? Because if I need to go back and forth all the time, then it takes much, much longer to get all those tests to pass. So did you manage to get that down to a minimum of frustration or
maybe the way we've got so far is we have a tool that developers can run to create a test cluster in the close enough way that our test pipelines do and then deploy their applications to and manually trigger the end-to-end test suite from their local machines against that cluster. There is still, you know, those manual steps, and you have to create the cluster first. You then have to manually run the tests on your machine, you know, pointing at this new cluster with, you know, providing it the kubeconfig and all this kind of thing. But it works. It allows you to run the test locally before you put up the PR. But I do wish there's more of a way to replicate the exact same steps used in the pipeline as is used locally. I think that's, at least for Tekton, is not quite there yet. Because Tekton has this concept of tasks that then have steps within them, and you have multiple tasks within a pipeline, and maybe not all of those tasks is something that you actually want to replicate locally, because there are things like, if it's from a pull request, for example, you're setting the GitHub checks on it as pending so that the PR is blocked until the test pass, for example. You know, you don't want to run that locally. You just want to run the setup and the tests or the deployment or whatever. And finding a way to pull that down into a local environment is something we haven't quite solved yet. We haven't found the right solution how to manage that.
I don't see there ever being a true solution for that. I think that there are particular things that we can do locally. But at the end of the day, I don't see that there's ever a way to fully replicate a dev environment. But what there is a way to fully automate and create repeatable process around spinning up and destroying dev environments, right? So again, thinking about the platform engineering piece, there should be a button somewhere where a developer clicks it and they go and they grab a cup of coffee. And when they come back, there's a full dev environment up and running. And then when they're done, they click another button and it deletes itself, right? That's the whole idea around self-service, because really what we want to do from a platform engineering perspective is give everybody the ability to say, okay, you shouldn't have to do all this. It's a lot of Terraform and a lot of CI/CD and a lot of configuration and this and that. Let's give you a button to go and do the thing. And I believe that that's at least the answer for something like this, because with local development, I mean, for years now, we've been trying to figure out a way to mimic a true environment on a local box. And we've gotten there to an extent, right? With Docker Desktop, with Minikube, with Kind clusters, we've gotten there to a particular point. In my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, but there's never going to be a way to fully replicate that dev environment. I think really what we should be doing is more or less putting our focus towards, okay, the dev environment's going to stay on a VM somewhere, it's going to be in the cloud, wherever. How do we make it as accessible and inaccessible as possible, right? Give a button for creation, give a button for deletion, and boom, you're good to go. You're off to the races. I think that would really help people.
We've got kind of close to that. So we have a couple CLIs called Stand Up and Tear Down, that as long as you give them the appropriate values, they create those test environments that you need. The problem is like getting those correct configuration values and stuff. You still need to kind of know, you know, what sort of values you need to use and this sort of thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I do think that there is a way to minimize the blast radius there as much as possible. Like, for example, in the beginning, yeah, you're going to have to do things like know the node size, right? Because you need to know how much memory CPU you need for what you're testing. But eventually, that dev team, or not that dev team, but that QA team or that cybersecurity team or that front end team or back end team or whoever's using it, eventually you'll see a pattern like, oh, they're always using T2 Micro, right? So, okay, let's embed T2 Micro in their button, right? So then that's one less thing that they have to worry about. And then it's almost like just like gathering data and forecasting, right? It's like, okay, let's just keep peeling back as many pieces as possible from them. And then before you know it, they got one or two things that they need to pass in, if that, and you're kind of good to go. Of course, I just made it sound incredibly easy, and it's never that easy. It takes years to get there, but...
It's kind of funny you mentioned that. So I'm somebody who likes a lot of automation. I have a whole directory of little scripts in my .dot files that do all sorts of wild and wonderful things that I don't want to type out myself. And one of those is wrapping around these CLIs to always provide the configuration that I generally use when testing. So I've definitely, for my personal use case, got that. The thing is, we just need to get it into a way that is user-friendly for everybody else that needs to rely on this stuff.
1000%. And it could even be something that, like, to your point, it's a wrapper of something that already exists. Like, I remember years ago, I was working at a startup, and the developers wanted like a command line tool type of deal for interacting with certain AWS services, because they went into the UI and they're like, oh, this is a lot. And then they went into the CLI and the SDK and they're like, oh, this is a lot. So like, we just want to be able to interact with, like, I think it was S3, EC2 and Lambda. So what we did was we literally created a CLI that was nothing more than a wrapper around the AWS CLI. It wasn't that it did anything in terms of like newer functionality. It just stopped functionality. It just exposed what it needed to expose for them. And that was it. And once you take off that confusion, it makes things a lot easier for people. And in my opinion, that's literally the whole reason why platform engineering should exist in the first place. I guess that's still up for debate, but I'm a firm believer that that's the reason, right? It's all about reducing complexity. And call it whatever you want, right? Call it DevX, call it whatever, right? I just call it platform engineering, because at the end of the day, you peel back the onion, it's more or less all the same stuff. But that's the gist, right? Just make things as simple as possible. Only show what people need, right? Because people want a lot of goodies until they get all the goodies and they're like, oh, that's too much. Right? They really just want what they want, right? And they're what they need.
And yeah, maybe they don't even need to understand the specifics, like in terms of the, which if they're going to choose the node size, it's not given that every developer wants to dig that down. That's why you could have like options to choose from, like small or medium or large, and then you could monitor and adjust the size that you would use for deployments of those different node sizes. But then developers don't need to, okay, what does this D2S2 something means? I have no idea. So we make potentially their life easier and maybe even ours, so that developers don't get back to us asking, okay, what should I choose?
1000%.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's closing that loop, right? I'm trying to think of what type of loop that would be, but the loop of like, here's the thing, wait, what's the thing? Here's the thing, wait, what's the thing? And we're always going like this, right? But to your point, Christina, if we can close that loop and like, here's a thing, here are your options, have fun, let us know if you need anything, you shouldn't, because it's all here.
Yeah.
It's also making sure that all the defaults are sensible and usable together out of the box, right? If you can make it so that you don't even have to provide any configuration, that's the ideal situation, in my opinion.
1000%. Christina, yeah. You want to say something?
I was just thinking about like minimizing the amount of options to choose from. You could even take that down to the application level, because that's what I've been seeing as well. We get a lot of options to implement different things with this modern frameworks, and then every developer starts implementing it in a different way, and then it becomes chaos that can potentially even cause issues when those applications are deployed on the Kubernetes clusters, for instance. And you still can provide, like, the platform engineering is also about like the whole templating piece, so you could actually help even on the application level if you want to help guide on, okay, what is the preferred way to implement a specific thing, like, yeah, I don't know, certificate validation or something like that. So you could help those who are creating a new apps by using some kind of a bare bone template, not only for infrastructure, but even for some app types, depending on how many services you are producing as an organization.
1000%.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now's the time, Marcus. Please feel free to plug away at anything you would like.
I don't really have anything. If you want to chat with me online, you can find me on Mastodon at marcus@k8s.social. I'm other places as well. You should be able to find by my name. Thank you for having me. I've had a great trip.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, Marcus.